considering.
I'm going to call to order. Can you hear me? I'm going to call to order the regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, October 2nd, 2017. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the victims in the Las Vegas shooting? Our prayers and hearts go out to not only the victims, but their families. Thank you. Please remain standing for our flag salute. One of the things that we really enjoy at our council meetings is getting the youth involved, and we usually have someone from one of our local schools come in and lead us in our pledge. And tonight we're honored to have Addie Andrade. So Addie is 10 years old and a sixth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. She enjoys class programs and presentations because she loves to perform. She also enjoys creating and animating Google Slides. Addie says that she likes living on the Central Coast because of the beach and the fresh air. She would like to either be a veterinarian because she loves to help animals in need, or an engineer because she likes to program and make things. Addie's hobbies include sports, drawing, reading, writing, and making crafts. A very busy young lady. Addie is accompanied this evening by her mom, Chris. Mom, where are you? Don't be shy to take photos. So Addie, do that.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So Addie, if you'll come up here, I have a certificate. Thank you very much for coming.
Oh, not there.
You want to center her? Pretend it's back. There you go. That's for you. Thank you. Thank you.
Good job. Very good.
Thank you. I recommend being both a veterinarian and an engineer.
Good career advice, Mr.
Exactly.
Lee. That just warms your heart up. It really does. Okay. Remember roll call, Donna?
Councilmember Lee.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Here.
And Mayor Scholes.
Present. Thank you. City Attorney, will you cover our closed session announcements?
Thank you, Mayor. We had a closed session on September the 18th, 2017, related to license and permit determinations. This was pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.7. It is in regards to seven applicants for permits. City Council did reconvene in open session and announced there were no reportable actions taken.
Thank you, City Attorney. So we're going to move on to the agenda review. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda as presented by staff? If not,
no.
I'll accept the motion.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we proceed with the agenda as published.
Second.
There's a motion. There is a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we will proceed with the agenda as presented by staff. I believe there are extra copies on the table toward the back of the room. So we are going to move into our ceremonial calendar this evening. This is item number one. This is a proclamation declaring October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Let's see, do we have anyone here to accept this?
Yes.
Okay, so let me read this into the record, and then you can introduce yourself. Sound good? This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and it says, and this is a very long one, so I may not read the whole thing. It says, whereas domestic violence is a, please turn your
cell phones to sign it. Very good. It says, whereas domestic violence is a systematic pattern of abusive behavior to gain power and control through use of physical violence, sexual violence, threats, and or emotional abuse used by the intimate partner against another, and therefore it is now more accurately called intimate partner violence by those who work with this issue. And whereas intimate partner violence affects women, men, and children of all racial, ethnic, cultural, social, religious, and economic groups, and a single day, safe houses in California served almost 5,800 women and children. Approximately 40% of California women experienced physical intimate partner violence in their lifetimes, and 1 in 3 female murder victims in the United States are killed by intimate partners. And whereas the California law enforcement agencies receive 162,302 domestic violence-related calls in 2015, and intimate partner violence accounts for 15% of all violent crimes in the United States, which has a significant economic impact on our country, as it is estimated that 8 million days of paid work are lost nationwide each year as a result of intimate partner violence. And whereas children exposed to intimate partner violence in the home experience long-term consequences such as difficulty at school, substance abuse, serious adult health problems, and among families, intimate partner violence is the third leading cause of homelessness. And whereas the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County strives to increase public awareness and understanding of intimate partner violence and the needs of survivors, in 2016, the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County served nearly 800 survivors in our community, providing essential life-saving services for survivors and their children fleeing violence. And whereas survivors of intimate partner violence embody incredible strength and resilience to overcome trauma and abuse to build lives free of violence. And whereas the City of Grover Beach strongly supports the efforts of the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County and its partners to work to reduce intimate partner violence in San Luis Obispo County through prevention, education, increased awareness, and holding perpetrators who commit acts of violence responsible for their actions. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby proclaim October 2017 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month in the City of Grover Beach. Please.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Kirsten Rambo, and I'm the Executive Director of the Women's Shelter Program of SLO County. And as of 6 weeks ago, I'm also a resident of Grover Beach. On behalf of the Board of Directors and the staff of the Women's Shelter Program, I'm honored to receive your proclamation recognizing October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. In the audience, I'd like to recognize Kathy Tompkins from our Board of Directors, and also here is Christine Johnson, our Director of Development and Communications. There she is, snapping a photo. You may know that for 38 years, the Women's Shelter Program has been serving survivors of domestic violence, also called intimate partner violence. What you may not know is just how much we do right here in Grover Beach. I'll tell you more about that in a second. The services of the Women's Shelter have grown from a single safe house furnishing emergency shelter to a series of programs that still include emergency shelter, as well as a 24/7 crisis line, counseling, legal assistance, Latina services, transitional housing, a child abuse treatment program, and therapy in local schools. Now, since 1999, we've been right here in Grover Beach providing these services to South County residents. Just today, actually, we doubled our office space in Grover Beach and are now able to serve even more survivors right here, close to where they live and work. Since 2011, we've operated 4 transitional housing apartments in Grover Beach, specifically for IPV survivors working to rebuild their lives. And thanks to our partnership with Lucia Mar School District, we're also providing trauma counseling services to children at 7 different South County schools. If you're wondering how to help yourself or others, here are quick 4 ways to do that. First, if someone tells you they're being hurt by their spouse, their partner, or their ex, believe them. It's so simple, and it's the first step toward healing and safety, but you'd be amazed how often people find the courage to speak up, and then they're either not believed or ignored. Second, make a phone call. 805-781-6400 is our confidential crisis line. Talk to us about what you're experiencing. We're here to help. Third, join us at our 2 big events this month. October 12th is a candlelight vigil at Mission Plaza at 6:30 p.m. And October 29th is a really special film screening of an award-winning documentary called Private Violence, followed by a Q&A with the filmmaker. That's at 4:15 p.m. at the Palm Theater. Last, you can always donate your time as a volunteer or direct cash donations. Offering these comprehensive multicultural services is expensive, and funds are always needed. Please visit our website, which is wspslo.org, for more information about our events, the issue, or to donate. I want to close with a quick testimonial from one of our clients. She said, "The Women's Shelter Program has saved my life. Without the Women's Shelter Program, I would still be homeless and living in my car. I now have a home and two jobs, and my boys and I are safe and secure. That's why we do the work we do. Thank you for your support."
Thank you for those. Okay, we're going to move into our public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that the council will listen, but we cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. I have one speaker request form, and that is from Jack Keane. Mr. Keane, are you here?
Hi, guys. I sat up there for some time, a long time ago, and there's a few things that have bothered me lately that seems to be that the developers in town are taking advantage of our city and you guys. The two lodge projects that are going on, or hotel projects that are going on, one over in El Camino Real and one down at the beach. I was in on the ground floor of the one down at the beach. And it was originally envisioned to take up that whole corner where the gas station used to be and the trailer park of Lesage Riviera. And somehow or other that got dropped. That's a lot of room that could be used today. And it seems like that, is it Pacifica, the developer that's running the thing? They're always asking for extensions. And I don't know the reason why. And I haven't seen them move any dirt around down there for... what's it been, 20 years? That's bothered me. And then also the city is spending a lot of money on various things that that was supposed to be part of the project. There's two things now that they want done is the dump station, and then also they want to move that restroom. And the dump station probably needs to be moved, and it's not that expensive. The restroom is a block building. There's nothing wrong with it. Why do we got to tear it down and put up another one, another block building? That doesn't make sense to me. And then it's not in it, the plans that I've seen for it so far is a hotel with a lot of rooms, like 150 rooms. I don't know how many rooms they have now on the thing. A restaurant and a convention center type of thing. That all seemed to have gone away. And we still have no dirt has been moved down there at all. And I think the developers were just using us, and we're going to be the laughing stock of the South County. The next project is the one down on El Camino Real. They went in, and that was all ready to go, and they needed sewer and water brought in. And they tore up the street down there. It was a perfectly good street. They tore it up, and now there's patches all over the place, and you have to go about 10 or 15 miles an hour just to go down the street. I drive that every day, and I keep an eye on what's going on. They started working on that about a year ago, And then apparently they ran out of money. That's only my only excuse that I can see. They laid down the pipe down going down El Camino Real, and then they patched the street, and it's terrible. You can't hardly drive on it now. Another case where we're being used. And of course, the streets in town. You know, everybody's saying, you know, I've been paying taxes on my property for, who knows, 2 years now, something like that. And where's the pavement in front of my house? It's not there. And the streets are getting worse. Some of them are better, but that's the other thing. So I think you need to watch your money on the lodge project. They need to get involved in it. So far, it's been all city and all city money. And I don't know how much money that we've spent. John, you probably know for sure, right? And all the little things that have been done along the way.
Thank you, Jack. I need you to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for bringing that up. Okay. I didn't have any other speaker requests. For public comment?
Yes.
Come on.
Thank you. Hi. My name is Marsha Alter, and I am a volunteer for a new nonprofit called HomeShare Slow, which I know you're familiar with. It is an innovative program that provides affordable housing opportunities throughout San Luis Obispo County by matching people who have a spare room with people who need affordable housing. I'm here tonight to say thank you to all of you. I want to say thank you for your donation this year of $5,000, and I want to let you know the impact that it has had. Already, in just starting up since January of this year, we've signed up over 30 home providers and 35 home seekers. And we have made 7 matches within our program of those people, and 2 more people, well, 4 people, who found matches just by coming to our various events. This also includes over 20 training events that we've had throughout the county, and we've shared housing information and home sharing skills with more than 700 men and women of all ages, needs, and concerns. HomeShare Slow figures that the total economic benefit for just these initial matches for just this year is actually between $97,000 and $170,000. This translates directly into extra money our home share matches might spend elsewhere in our county. Often matches are senior women with such limited incomes that health and safety is at risk. Matches now have more money to spend on health care, transportation, home maintenance, improved social lives, and more. And beyond helping these individuals with housing needs, the whole community benefits. We benefit with decreased public service costs, including emergency calls to 911 and even lower adult protective service caseloads. We have higher levels of health and safety since our clients are more able to pay for their medical care, home safety devices, and better able to have home maintenance inside and outside. Seniors are less isolated and more able to pay for transportation and to participate in community events and therefore volunteer more. Commuters can live closer to where they live, socialize, volunteer, and shop. To me, the big win is that HomeShare Slow can produce a new home in a fraction of the cost in time, money, and materials relative to new construction. On behalf of our clients, our board, and contract staff, thank you for your decision to support HomeShare Slow and to provide housing options for all residents in our community. We look forward to working with you as we continue to develop innovative ways to provide more housing and choices for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alter, for those comments. Okay, that's my last speaker request form on the public communications. So I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. And City Manager, I'm just thinking, two things with respect to, I think Mr. Keene brought up a couple of items. I can't give you a lot of details today, and I think maybe if you can get the number for the city manager, we can give you more information. I will say the clarification was originally that project, you were correct, was to include the corner lot in LeSage, but it was a requirement that the city purchase those properties to be part of that agreement. And so working with the state is the landowner of where the hotel is planned to be built. So it is a joint proposal between the state of California and Pacifica and Grover Beach. And as you can imagine, projects like that take a long time. And I share your frustrations with the delay in turning the ground. But I think we can provide you more information on that as well as the planned hotel on El Camino Real, correct? So, Matt, if you can make sure you get Mr. Keene's information, that'd be great to follow up. And Jack, I'm more than happy to sit on that meeting as well. Okay? Okay, let's move to the consent agenda. This is, we typically take the consent is where we put routine items as a group. There are five items on consent tonight. One is the Treasury report for the period of September 8th through the 22nd. The next is the Treasury report for the 2016 streets bond account. One is also the minutes of the City Council meeting on June 5th, 2017. There is the City Council meeting scheduled for calendar year 2018. And then finally, the City of Grover Beach debt management policy. Do any members of the Council want to pull any items from consent?
No.
I was thinking that we would pull item five and we can just have a little more discussion around that. We'll put that at the end of the agenda. Okay. I don't have any speaker request forms on the consent agenda, so at this point I'm looking for a motion on items 2, 3, 4, and 6.
I'd go ahead and make a motion that we approve the consent agenda as presented, with the exception of item 5.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there is no additional discussion, I believe this is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. And Mayor Scholes.
Yes, that motion carries. Okay, we're going to move on to our public hearings tonight. This is item number 7. This is potential programs for inclusion in the state community development block grant applications. Mr. Buckingham, are you giving the staff report? Oh, Ms. Reese will. Okay. Whenever you are ready, you have the floor.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and members of the City Council. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development authorizes the use of Community Development Block Grant, or commonly known as CDBG funds, to assist low and moderate income individuals or households, or aid in the prevention or elimination of slums or blight. The program is administered in the state by the State Department of Housing and Community Development. Annually, they release a Notice of Funding Availability, or NOFA. In January of 2014, you may recall the city received 2013 CDBG funding to complete $1.5 million in waterline improvements. We updated the housing element and economic development strategy, and $180,000 was spent in public service programs for eviction prevention and rapid rehousing. The 2017 NOFA, in the amount of approximately $27 million, was released on September 1st and is due in December. Tonight is the first of two public hearings and will allow the public to comment on what types of projects or what types of eligible activities the city should apply for. The second public hearing would be to discuss and approve the application prior to submittal. Selected projects must either directly benefit low and moderate income households that are individually qualified or benefit a predominantly residential area that is comprised of at least 51% low or moderate income households. Citywide, the city is at 48% low and moderate income Therefore, we are not eligible to apply for citywide activities. Therefore, for a project to benefit an area, it must be located within an eligible census tract block. There are two census tract blocks that have the low mod percentage of at least 51%. One is on the west side of the city, but it is not predominantly residential. It involves the strawberry fields, the industrial areas, and a small portion of residential. But only the block group on the east side, which is bounded by West Grand Avenue, Oak Park, Mentone, and 10th, which is tract 120, block 3, is eligible for area-wide projects. In addition to benefiting low or moderate income households, selected projects must also fall under one of the state's six activity categories. In order to provide a list of potential projects, staff reviewed council adopted policies, the capital improvement program, the water and sewer master plans, and contacted several nonprofit organizations, some of which whom submitted written requests. The council may also want to discuss additional projects, including any that are received during the public hearing tonight. Public improvement projects must be located in and serve a predominantly residential area and include water. These projects include water and sewer facilities or flood drain facilities and accessibility-related street improvements. Staff has identified two different projects, a waterline replacement project and curb gutter sidewalk project. Although the 2013 grant completed a number of substandard 2- and 4-inch water lines throughout the city, a number remain. These existing water lines are deficient in size and are most are beyond their useful life. In addition, there's a need to add some control valves to water mains and fire hydrants. The estimated cost of this project is approximately $1.7 million. The capital improvement program also identifies the need to construct curb gutter sidewalk and corner ramps throughout the city. Historically, these types of improvements have not historically scored well in the CDBG program. There are approximately 50 corner ramps in this area that could be upgraded, and the estimated cost of that is $225,000. Therefore, with the estimated cost significantly less than that of the waterline project, staff is not recommending this project be included in the application. Public facility projects include acquisition, rehab, or construction of buildings used for public purposes such as training or health services, shelters, that type of thing. However, the total funding allocated for public facility projects are typically very low, with only a couple awarded in the state last year. However, staff has identified three potential projects. A senior center, however, the city would not be competitive because a specific site has not been selected or conceptual plans prepared. Cleaver Park, the facility would be required to exclusively serve low or moderate income groups such as seniors. The use for preschool, after-school activities, and other recreational activities would not be eligible. And then lastly, Mentone Basin Park rehabilitation includes ADA improvements and rehabilitation of the bathrooms. However, similar to the curb gutter sidewalk project mentioned earlier, it would not likely score well. The next category is planning and technical assistance. It includes studies such as the economic development strategy, which was before you a few months ago, and preparation of plans for projects. Staff has identified that a housing condition survey in preparation for the next housing element update could be completed, and feasibility studies for a roundabout at at West Grand Avenue and 4th Street, or a feasibility study for a senior center could be done in order to be in a better position for funding for the two projects. However, due to the application being limited to two activities and the relatively small amounts of funds needed for these studies in comparison to some of the other projects, staff is not recommending that they be included in this year's application. Under housing activities, there are three categories: home ownership assistance, housing rehab for single-family homes, and then housing rehab for multifamily development. The housing element includes goals for seeking financing for first-time home buyers and for housing rehabilitation. For both of these programs, the city was successful in obtaining some home program funds to assist what resulted in a total of six households. Due to a significant sum of funds benefiting a low number of beneficiaries, however, the staff does not recommend applying for this program under CDBG. The housing rehab program for multifamily developments, that program requires the application to identify a specific location. The city did receive a request from Family Care Network in order to rehabilitate a six-unit development on Long Branch that they acquired earlier this year. And that amount was $235,000, was that request. The application can also include public services activity. This activity is unique in that it can have more than one service or activity under it. So this category for this year can have a maximum of two activities, and its maximum funding amount is $500,000. Examples include child care, health care, fair housing counseling, and that type of thing. There are two groups that have submitted requests for two different programs. Under subsistence payments, otherwise known as eviction prevention, Five Cities Homeless Coalition requested a little over $400,000, and Slow Housing Connection is requesting $165,000. Security deposits, otherwise known as rapid rehousing, Five Cities Homeless Coalition requested $87,000, and Slow Housing Connection is requesting $165,000. Business assistance and micro enterprise assistance is the last category of programs that typically includes business training and financing for businesses that do not have access to conventional lending sources. Staff is not aware of any businesses that are seeking such loans to include in the application. In summary, staff is requesting that the City Council select the projects that staff should consider in including the application. Of the potential projects, staff reviewed the three that are most feasible: waterline improvements, rehabilitation of the multifamily development, and public services activities for eviction prevention and rapid rehousing. However, because the state application only allows two activities, staff is recommending public service or public improvement for waterline and public services for eviction prevention and rapid rehousing. Should the council direct staff direct that public services be included in the application, staff is requesting that direction be given on how to distribute the $500,000. There are four options that staff was able to come up with: either distribute the funds evenly between the two programs, or evenly between the two organizations, and they could help us, you know, decide which programs to fund. Distribute the funds in proportion to the request, and or fund only eviction prevention, which does have more than $500,000 requested for it, distributed to the organizations proportionally. Staff and the city's consultant for CDBG, from the Paul Ashby from Adams Ashby Group, are available for questions.
Thank you for that staff report. Let me see if there are any questions. Let me start to my right. Barbara, you have any questions?
Um,
Nothing specific right now.
Okay, Mary?
I saw that the recommendation was $1.7 million for waterline improvement and $500,000 for public services. And is that because we're capped at 2.2?
We're capped. Public services is capped at 500.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That was all I had.
Jeff?
And just two specific questions. The first of which is we did have a public hearing in April, so where which was appears to be now be overridden by the new NOFA,
right.
Which is why we're having the public hearing again tonight. And so, and is that also the reason why we are looking at going from three services down to two? Is that my understanding?
When they released, when the state released the NOFA, they reduced the number of activities we could apply for to two.
Okay. Gotcha. And so from a staff perspective, the public service activity was a opportunity to have higher ranking or higher scores and possibly benefit greater numbers of people than the housing discussion. Okay. So I just want to make sure that that was the recommendation coming forward from staff. Okay. That's all I had for now.
Okay. Great. Let me go back on page one of the staff report where you talked about the 2016 and which in April 18 of 2016 the council reallocated funds for three public service activities. And then the last sentence in that paragraph says that there is a, looks like there were $6,047 that was not utilized and that becomes disencumbered. Do we lose those funds or do we have an opportunity to transfer those funds?
Our contract ended September 30th, so Saturday. So if that organization, Exploration Station, if they did spend any funds, we're not sure if they did, they can turn in their report in the next 30 days, I believe, so we can reimburse what they did spend, and then the rest would be disencumbered.
Okay. And do we know why they reduced the number of categories from three to two? I mean, there's some fantastic programs in here, and it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm not aware. Paul might be able to shed some light.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. So we sit on their advisory committee, and they're doing a redesign at HCD right now. We talked a little bit this in April that the state of California is in a bind where they're the worst state as far as expenditure rate goes in the country. So every April, HUD looks at a state or an entitlement jurisdiction, and you're allowed to have 1.5 times your allocation on the books in your line of credit. The state of California has 5.5 times that amount. They've gone through significant staff loss there. They're in the middle of a redesign shift, and they do not have nearly as many reps as they used to have and knowledge in that department. So from what we've heard from them is that they're trying to reduce the number of activities so that they can reduce their workload as well as increase those activities that are actually going to perform and get these funds out. So they've gone from three to two, and they've also increased some application maximums in hopes of doing some larger scale projects to see these funds come off the credit balance a little faster.
Okay, and don't leave. I was noticing, and I think in Ms. Reese's staff report, there was a discussion about handicap ramps and other improvements like that, and I think she had said even though the number was low, the probability of getting that approved remains low. I mean, can you kind of add a little more detail
Sure.
behind that? Why is that?
So for each public improvement, each activity that we're would be applying for, there's a need category, which is where you're going up against other applications that are in that same category. So anybody going for public improvements, you are competing against them for those funds. And so in addition to that low mod number that you saw on your screen of 65%, mm-hmm. They look at that, and then they look at the health and safety need that you're able to document within your application of why you need these funds more than somebody else does. Typically, water has scored higher in previous years in the delivery of water. When lines are breaking, that's been kind of critical. ADA ramps and sidewalks, curb gutter, they're just a difficult thing to propose need to and score. You'll be going up against applications that may have a cease and desist order, a boil notification from the health department. Those are kind of things that you can be up against. So we're always just looking at the application that's going to score the highest. In addition, you know, I don't want to say that it weighs entirely on it, but there is a funding, too, that we're looking at, and that project was only in the $200,000 range, which is on the smaller scale.
Yeah, because I guess that was my thought is the only census block track in Grover Beach that fits the criteria.
Yeah.
We've got Grover Beach Elementary School. We've got the community center. We've got not one but two parks, and people getting around safely.
Yeah.
To me, seems should be a priority. So I guess I'm just trying to understand: would there be a way to make it be more competitive to say, you know, I know the state has a Safe Routes to School program, but I know they continue to reduce that amount of money, and SLOCOG continues to be very competitive. So
yeah, that money has shrunk for Safe Routes to School. If we're going to look at an application like that, and I'm happy to do so with staff, one of the things that we would look at would be if there's been a pedestrian study or something done in that area. Is there traffic data? Is there police reports? Is there incidents where children have been hit on the way to school? Things like that. Again, you're always trying to just present the most documentation that you can for the need in the application.
Great.
And just to point out, we discussed this last time as well, just to remind everyone, you do only have one block group that's eligible, and that is because that income survey that you had done had expired after its five-year shelf life.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay. That stimulated any additional questions from council members?
Actually, did one question for me. So on the public services activity, so would the funds only be able to be used in that one census tract, or would those be able to be used citywide?
The public services activity, each household is individually certified or verified that they meet the income requirements.
Okay.
So they don't need to be in that census block.
Okay, so it was the public improvement discussion.
Any project that serves an area has to be in that area.
Great, thank you for that clarification.
Mm-hmm. I did have one more. So I noticed this is due by December. Do we have any idea then when we would hear the result?
March.
And so then this process will last us for 3 years? Is that? No.
The funding would go until about 2020, yeah.
2020. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let me open this up to the public. So let me check. I'm assuming the majority of the folks here are here for this item. And I believe, Jana, are you here?
Yes, sir.
So I have a block of blue speaker request forms. Are you looking to do a presentation, and are these folks part of that presentation?
Yes.
Oh, they are. Okay. So I just want to make sure then, because I've got Larry Vernon, and looks like last name is Ursula, Linda Foy, Wall, and Mike Bird. Is that your group? Okay. So I think we talked about is giving 10 minutes for the entire group. So who's gonna lead off the presentation? Donna, can you put 10 minutes on the timer, please?
Mayor and Council, my name is Larry Vernon. I've been a Grover Beach resident for 39 years. I'm also a retired sergeant from the Santa Maria Police Department, where I specialized in community services for most of my career. I spent over 20 years on the Board of Directors of Good Samaritan Shelter in Santa Maria, and approximately 3 years a member of the Board of Directors of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. We're gathered here tonight to show support for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition CDBG grant application, including some members of the Board of Directors, our staff, volunteers, and clients. Folks, you can stand up and be recognized. We wanted to express how our programs, assistance, clientele, and agency have grown significantly over the past several years, and we wanted to present an organized, meaningful story to you while being respectful of your time. I know we all want to get out of here at a decent hour tonight. The previous CDBG grant you awarded our agency was put to significant and efficient use. We received grant funding to use in rental assistance for eviction prevention, and we expended those funds in a timely manner. We exceeded our goal in clients served by 40%. We achieved this spending less in staff costs and offered more in client services than expected. 100% of those clients have remained housed. The value added by investing in Five Cities Homeless Coalition, it means that you're also going to have financial stability education for our clients. Clients served under your grant, 30% have shown an increase in their income. 100% have paid their rent on time, and there have been 16 savings accounts opened. The menu of services that the Five Cities Homeless Coalition has includes benefits advocacy, medical respite, substance abuse and detox partnership, unaccompanied youth case management, and a seasonal warning center. The benefit of awarding Five Cities Homeless Coalition the full amount requested really comes down to getting the biggest bang for your buck. We have a variety of tools in our tool chest to effectively serve our clients. We have additional funding to assist with added needs and spread the staffing costs. And we can do all of this while keeping very modest program service staff and administration fees low. In addition to phenomenal staff, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition has built a diverse board of directors whose members have a passion for the issue of homelessness and for strengthening our community. Our members include city council members, law enforcement, public agency, and business leaders such as the CEO of Dignity Health, the Rio Grande Community Hospital, the faith community, and other community volunteers who give their time and resources while representing the interests of the Five Cities, including Grover Beach. Through the commitment of our board, staff, and supporters, we were able to open an office and storefront in May of this year. We've seen rapid growth. In this past month, we welcomed 230 visitors through our doors, one-third of those being new clients. In the interest of moving things along, I'd like to pass it on to one of our clients.
Do you have a name?
Oh. You guys didn't work this out? Is this Zergonia?
Zergonia Ursula.
Thank you.
Good evening. I appreciate the time and opportunity that you have given me to be able to share my experience. I'm a nurse in the community, and I work at a surgery center, and I love this area. I moved from Sacramento. I came from a very unsafe situation, as well as my three children. Two of them are here with me, and they go to the schools in the Lucia Mar district. It was very unsafe. I lived in Atascadero, moved there for a month just to get away from the situation. And then, obviously, Women's Shelter did help me, Shauna Pruitt and many others, as well as RISE. Wonderful programs that help women that gone through a domestic abuse situation. And so it's very still scary for me to discuss the situation, and I'm very fearful. But the anxiety and all the problems that I've gone through have subsided, and I'm able to share this. Women's Shelter, as well as RISE, referred me to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition because I needed a deposit, as well as first month's rent, to be able to transition my family into a safe environment in the area where I work. And Veronica from the Five Cities Coalition, I want to thank very much for the compassionate, kind words, as well as the practical advice and the very quick, responsive follow-up concern that she has provided me has been amazing. It's helped me transition easily. I'm able to now be 3 months into my place without falling behind on my rent. I'm stable, as well as my children. They're doing wonderful. Therapy is provided. She's also helped me to learn about the different programs and resources. So she gave me lots of practical advice that I could use, and it's amazing. So if anybody deserves this fund, and definitely the Five Cities Coalition, because it has helped me tremendously, as well as my three children. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being here. Let's see, Linda Foy.
Hello. I'm Linda Foy. I'm a property manager. I've got an apartment complex in Grover Beach, and also three that I run in Arroyo Grande. I've worked closely with the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, specifically with Veronica. I've got numerous tenants that have been with me for 7 years. I do not have problems with these tenants. Their rent is always on time. And if there's ever a need where I have another tenant that was not in the program before and something has happened within their family and they need some outside resources, I always refer them to Veronica, and we're able to keep roofs over the family's heads. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Raul, it says, is it UC? Ook? Oh.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, councilmen and women. My name is Raul, and you know, I've raised, out of seven kids, I've raised six kids by myself as a single dad. I got into a freak accident at work, and I blew up my back, and from that I got nerve damage. So I'm on a limited income. In September 30th, I got this notice to quit, or notice to, you know, vacate, you know, my house. I had 60 days. And I was stressed out, like I lost a couple of years, I think. And the Homeless Coalition, they were there for me. Veronica is my, you know, activist, and she's. I mean, words cannot describe what she's done for me and my family. She's given us a plan. She's helped us out with the first month deposit, and she helped us out with, you know, the first month rent. And it, you know, I mean, I lived in the same spot for like 9 years, and I've never seen how expensive it is, you know, these days. And while you're getting kicked out of your house, you got to still pay rent. You know, how are we supposed to pay rent and get, you know, come up with, you know, $5,000 or $6,000? You know, not too many people have perfect credit scores, or they don't have, you know, the funding, you know, like, you know, three times the amount of rent. That's ridiculous. You know, I think the city should put a cap, you know, because, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, homeless people that are out there, you know, needing this help. You know, Homeless Coalition is there. You know, they have a plan. You know, they give you a plan. You know, they hear your story. But, you know, this is what Veronica did for me. You know, she gave me a plan. This is what you're going to do. And, you know, let's take care of business. I'm you know, my family and I, you know, like I said, I got a lot of kids. We really, you know, appreciate what, you know, the Homeless Coalition has done for us. I mean, we really do. I mean, I'm without words. I really appreciate them. And, you know, whatever they need, I mean, I hope you guys give it to them, because they really help people. I mean, they really, really help, you know, everybody in the community. So, you know, I want to thank you guys, you know, and hopefully you guys do give them the funding. You know, please give them what they need, because, you know, they really, really do a good job. I really appreciate them. Even my pastor from Calvary Chapel, Steve Carr, you know, he told me that this is a great, you know, organization. You know, they itemize everything that they spend, what they do, how they do it. And like I said, I mean, I really, really appreciate Veronica. I mean, she's awesome. So thank you, guys. You know, hopefully you guys, you know, give them the funding.
Thank you, Mr. Ook. Wow, seven children?
Seven. One lives in Texas, and six live with me. Well, they don't live with me, but, you know, like, I got three adults.
Wow. I have two daughters. That's impressive. Mike Bird. Is Erica, are you with this group? Who? So Mike, oh, hang on a sec. Is she first?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Erica Woodard.
You can pull it.
And I just want to say that this program has helped me and my family. I'm a single mom, and why I needed the funds or the program was because I got sick with vertigo and was unable to work. And so I was out, you know, I just had no really where to go. Met Veronica, and she's been tremendous blessing to me. She's compassionate. The whole organization is knowledgeable. They're efficient. Because of the program in itself, I am now employed through the County San Luis Obispo, the health agency, and it's a lot to learn there. And I was able to alleviate the stress of not being able to pay my rent and focus on my job. So now I'm flourishing there, and I do have my own savings account now again, and I'm just have a lot of hope for the future. So it has benefited me and my family tremendously. So I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Now, Mike Bird. And Donna, can we put Mike? Can you wrap up in 2 minutes, or you need more time?
In 14 seconds?
No. Oh. I'm giving.
I'll go as fast as I can.
Well, no, I don't want you to rush. I want to give you time.
I have a prepared statement.
Oh, perfect.
I've never done that before, right. So I'll be right on time. Yeah, I just want to thank you for listening to all of us this evening. It's been really important that we wanted to share the message of what we do and why we do it. I'm Mike Bird. I've operated a business here for 30 years thereabouts. I also happen to be the president of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. Let me get started. I'm not used to a prepared statement. I usually just talk. So, as you can see, we're a passionate bunch, and when it comes to serving our less fortunate neighbors and making positive impact on our community, an investment in the Five Cities Homeless Coalition creates a multiplier effect and opportunities to help those who need it most. In addition to the specific grant funding areas, clients receive a holistic approach and a look at their opportunities and sustainable solutions for their futures. It's an integrated program. Our board of directors and staff carefully scrutinize options to implement the most effective and impactful programs that not only provide sustainable housing opportunities, but additionally improve the quality of life in our communities. In addition to this grant, we manage several other housing programs, which enables us to effectively use funds to match clients' needs, whatever those needs may be. For example, we currently partner with Good Samaritan Shelter, offering the supportive services for veterans, families, rapid rehousing program. How's that for a mouthful? Which is based in the 5CHC office just down the street here. Since October 2015, this program has housed 95 veterans families in the South County. Our previous grant request was based on the number of clients we could serve in the time allowed, which, as you might recall, was a fairly limited time. And as you know, we exceeded all expectations. We base the current 30-month grant request on our experience and estimate that there's twice the need in this community than there is funding available. So it's clearly a program that's needed and deserving of your support. The Five Cities Homeless Coalition strongly believes in partnerships. Tonight, we have an opportunity to thank you for the partnership we've had with the City of Grover Beach. We value the trust you've placed in us, and it's our wish to continue efficiently using these funds to assist the most vulnerable among us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. So I have a speaker request from Bobby Boyer of the Family Care Network. Bobby, are you here? To be fair, I'm going to give you up to 10 minutes if you'd like.
Oh.
Come on.
Good evening, Mayor Scholes. Good evening, council members. Thank you for having me. My name is Bobby Boyer. I'm CFO of Family Care Network. And first of all, I wanted to thank you for the opportunity that you gave us to submit our request for the rehabilitation work. I also want to let you know that we understand your decision and are very, very happy that the great work that the Homeless Coalition is doing and these other parts of your funding decisions are going to be met. So certainly there are no hard feelings. But I did want to take an opportunity to give you an update on what we're doing at our property that we purchased, just so you know, and our other homeless programs. We have, since we last came here in April, we have been able to successfully transition the current tenants with support to other properties, and we have fully housed our 5 units that we have available for homeless families. We are able to bring back 5 families, which enabled them to reunite with their children through bringing families home in partnership with our San Luis Obispo County. We are doing this brand new program called Bringing Families Home. And so with that program, we have housed many, 5 of which are at this property. And we will our goal is to house 30 families this year. In addition to that, we have housed many homeless families in Grover Beach and the South County under our HSP homeless support program in coordination with the county. So I wanted to give you that good news. And as far as our property, we will continue to do the work that we can do. We have done all the safety, health and safety improvements that need to be done. We have also done some improvements on our landscape. And so we are doing what we can with the money that we have. And we hope that in the future you will consider us for a CDBG grant or things that might come up in the future. So thank you very much again for the opportunity. We appreciate the time.
Thank you for those comments. Okay, that was the last speaker request from I had, but let me just see if anyone else had. I wanted to come forward and address this item before the council. Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close it. So I'm going to close public communication, bring it back to the council. Okay. So let's have some discussion. And Miriam, you want to start?
Okay. I think I agree with staff's recommendation that, you know, we should definitely do the water lines, especially after all the talk about and all the thought we're putting into whether or not to raise rates. I mean, this would really help us out. So for sure, I think water lines. And then, you know, I really appreciate Ms. Boyer's comments because this was, gosh, never want to, this is a terrible choice to have to make. But I just think from a logical perspective, we should go with public services because we just can ask for more funds and do more good. And then as far as how to split it up the money, I was really hoping to hear from Slow Housing Connection today and just hear, I mean, it seems from their report in the packet that they must have utilized all the grant money, but I was really hoping on an update as to how that went, and so I'm just not sure about that. So I'd like to hear more from others. But
okay. Barbara?
I agree that I'm disappointed that Slow Housing Connection is not here. I'm very pleased to hear of the number of people that Five Cities Homeless Coalition has been able to house this past year. The eviction prevention program, I have sort of a question, and I don't know, Jana, maybe you'd be able to answer this for me. Do you have the same families going through a mill on this, or is it that widespread? Are the housing landlords being very tight on this sort of thing? What is the pattern that you're seeing?
Thank you. Jana Nichols, Five Cities Homeless Coalition. We have a success rate of all of our housing programs of over 95% of keeping our families housed for a year or more. In the particular grant that we've had with you this last year, 100% of the families that we've served are still housed. Unfortunately, the need is there. We have seen rising rents of more than 20-25%. Mr. Ook, I think, referred to that. He was in a home for 9 years and suddenly found himself facing a completely different rental market than he was aware of what was taking place out there. So unfortunately, we are seeing an increasing and continual need, but it is not necessarily with repetitive families. I mean, certainly there are those certainly there are those families that struggle. But as I say, we have a 95% success rate in keeping families housed for long term, and that's in large part due to the case management program we have. And you've heard our case manager's name several times tonight, and I would simply echo that we are very blessed to have her working with us. But it's the thoughtful working the plan, working the budget, teaching them financial literacy, teaching them some responsibilities of of how they actually, you know, need to behave as tenants. And then I will say, by virtue of our success, we have some strong relationships with our landlords, as you have seen demonstrated tonight, and they are, you know, willing to work with us when they might not otherwise with that client. But by virtue of their affiliation with us, they are willing to take a risk on someone that they might not otherwise. Thank you.
Okay. Is that it?
Yep.
Very good. Mr. Lee.
Certainly. Excuse me. And I'll preface my comments by saying that I am a member of the Board of Directors of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. So I'll preface my questions, which actually generated my comments, which generated a question. So and I'll echo the fact that I am disappointed that Slo Housing has not joined us this evening. Since both programs did have funding previously, can Bruce or Janet or Paul, can you share if there are any concerns with the auditing process for either of the programs? Was there any concerns that were generated for either program during the reimbursement process previously with the existing funds?
All the funds have been expended by both Five Cities Homeless Coalition and Slo Housing Connection. I'm not aware of any auditing concerns. They did one pre-audit or meeting early on in the process, and then they've done some with each funds request as well. And then there'll be a final one.
Okay. So both programs have successfully gone through the reimbursement process.
Correct.
And there was no concerns with either agency. So.
Correct.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and so Slo Housing Connection did email us earlier today. They had intended on attending, and something unexpected came up.
Thank you for that. I was just going to, when it came to my turn, I was going to clarify that they couldn't be here. I guess there was a board member's lady to be here, and then they had a family emergency. So, anyway.
Okay, yeah. Great. So then I'll start with the fact that, yes, I'm definitely supportive of the public improvement and the waterline improvement activity number one recommendation by staff, and in agreement with the public services activity number two. And then I'll, as we get into our deliberations, I can have some more comments or some more information with regards to the potential breakdown of funding.
Okay, very good. So I'm sure everyone heard my questions earlier where I was trying to go with this, but obviously there's been a change in the rules, and I think we've got some very worthy projects and services and applicants. It's really, I'm not going to say unfortunate, I guess basically there would be an opportunity, and maybe we can, after we get through this, talk about how do we improve pedestrian safety in this census tract in which we've got Grove Beach Elementary School, and I see these children walking to school every day, and that needs to be addressed. We need to figure out if there's a way to move forward on a pedestrian study and figure out how do we improve safety for our community residents. I would also say I think Ms. Boyer seems like she left, and I'll have more comments on that. So at this point, I would support the staff recommendation with respect to the public improvements. Upgrading water lines is certainly a public health safety concern, and it should be a priority to basically upgrade these substandard water lines as be consistent with what we've been doing throughout the community. With respect to public services, I do want to clarify what's being asked tonight is not that we specify a certain amount for any organization, but identify a total amount if we are going down the road of public services, correct?
We need total amount and program.
So basically, can you clarify on page 7, under you had talked about for public services activity, the options are, one, to distribute what staff is recommending, the $500,000 evenly between the two requested programs. Two would be to distribute the $500,000 evenly between the two organizations and let them decide which programs they want to fund. And then three, you got it on the screen. I don't need to read it. It's on that screen, but not that screen. So I'll just finish reading for those who can't see the screen or who are at home watching. Three is to distribute the $500,000 in proportion to the request so that both organizations receive a prorated amount And then finally, option would be to fund only eviction prevention, since the requests for that program exceed $500,000 and distribute to the organizations proportionately. Staff, can you maybe explain number three a little bit more so that folks, so that folks in the audience and others understand?
So number three would be based on their total requests. Hopefully this chart makes sense. But it would be spreading the funds between the two programs and the two organizations in proportion or by percentage the way it got requested. Mm-hmm. So if I did the math correctly, option three would have these funds. Eviction prevention would be about $350,000. Rapid rehousing or security deposits would be about $151,000 or $150,000, and then split between the two organizations that way, if you want to go down the splitting between the two organizations tonight or not.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, that doesn't. Can you leave that screen? Mm-hmm. Can you leave that up? All right. So those are my comments. I think these are worthy programs. Obviously, the report out and how effective these two organizations were over the last 2 years is it was very impressive. I think when we first decided to redirect funds and do that, there was some folks not in the community, and I don't mean just Grover, in the county overall, that had somewhat asked the question of why we were doing it. And I think we felt that there were people who were in need, and we could help where we can. And I think we are still in a situation like that, as obviously we had testimony tonight that shows there's still a need, that people still need help. And if we can do that and keep our budget balanced and provide public safety and all those other things, which is what we do, I think we should move forward in this direction. So what I'd like to do is open this up to see if someone would like to try a motion on this. And in your motion, I would like you to think about the options 1 through 4.
May I ask a question before we go to that point specifically?
You certainly may.
Cool. And it may be a question for Jana, if I may. So the coalition, as well as Slow Housing, put a funding request into both items. So in your opinion, is there one program that would be better served, or from your need, should both programs be both programs of eviction prevention and rapid rehousing be included? So, like, is there a greater need in eviction prevention, or is there a greater need in rapid rehousing? I know from your application, you've got significantly more money in the eviction prevention. So, hopefully that question makes sense. But so I can clarify that if needed.
It does. One of the things that we're trying to do, with the coalition, is to maximize available funds for various programs, so that we have some other funding currently available to us. It's called ESG, Emergency Solutions Grant Funding, that is heavily weighted to rapid rehousing services and very minimally weighted to eviction prevention. Until recently, citizens of Grover Beach were not eligible for those funds. The state made a change in the allocation that we've received, so Grover Beach residents are eligible for those. So at least I can't speak for the other applicant, but in our case, the reason we have weighted it as we have is because we have alternative funding for rapid rehousing that we believe that we can use for a lot of it. So we have weighted it to eviction prevention because we do not have that funding available through other means.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And so let me just back up. Staff, do you really need us to specify whether it's option 1 through 4, or are you just pointing out these are options?
We need at least the program and the amount so we can start the application. We don't need necessarily the organizations if you don't want to make that decision tonight.
Okay.
So does that mean, for example, we could say public services $500,000?
You don't need to break that broken down.
We're not. This isn't going to generate a resolution tonight. So this is direction for staff. It'll come back for a resolution where we'll have to have the amounts and activities specified. But I think in order to move forward with the application, I think staff's looking for direction on public services and to include both activities or one activity underneath those.
Oh, I see. So just Okay, so you would be fine with us saying yes, public services, yes, eviction prevention, and rapid rehousing, and then at a future hearing we could say what amount and to which organization?
At that hearing, at the second hearing, that will have to be in a resolution. So at that point, it'll need to be decided.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, and there probably would be someone from Slow Housing Connection here.
Yeah, we could get more background.
And what would the timing be for that second public hearing? Is that's prior to December, I'm assuming, right? So it might be
November.
It would be November.
Either.
It would
be the 6th or the 20th.
Yeah.
Okay.
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 So from that perspective, I mean, if I'm hearing this correctly, and tell me if I'm not.
Okay.
So definitely supportive of $500,000 allocation submittal for public services, and based upon what Ms. Nichols said, is a heavier weight towards eviction prevention versus rapid rehousing, but I don't know if we need to specify that.
I don't think we need to do that tonight.
I would just say we'll include both programs.
Yes.
At this point.
That is correct.
Okay. Then if that's the, do we need a motion towards that or is just guidance?
I think we should give a motion, legal counsel.
Then
yes.
I would make a motion that we apply for funding under the Community Development Block Grant Non-Entitlement Program in the amount of $1.7 million under Activity 1 for public improvements, waterline improvements, and $500,000 under the Activity Number 2 for public services associated with eviction prevention and rapid rehousing.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion. There's a second. Any additional discussion? Okay, seeing none, let's do a roll call on this, Donna.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. So motion carries, and then we'll have another hearing in which we will give a little more detail on how that money will be allocated per the two the programs.
And just to go back to Family Care Network for a
yes.
second, one thing we've talked about on and off, and maybe that's something to talk about in the future, I know we have those little pieces of land that we haven't been able to use for affordable housing, and at different times we talk about keep them, sell them, but at some point maybe those could be used for funding for Family Care Network or something. We could talk about that in the future.
So let me do you one better. I think the program that they talk about, rehabilitation of multifamily housing, there aren't a lot of programs like that out there. A lot of them are slanted towards single-family homes or first-time home buyers, and I think what they've done in our community is a big investment. So I think maybe we give staff some direction to take a look and see if there are other funding options to assist in that effort. I know in the past we had probably some money left from, or that was in the
redevelopment.
We basically dissolve redevelopment in those funds. So I would just say let's give staff some direction, take a look and see if there are other opportunities to participate or partner with them in that endeavor. I would also say that we ask staff to take a look at what it would cost to do a housing condition survey. I think we do need to have that discussion about how do we improve housing in Grover Beach. And so I think the first step would be to do the survey. And I know that this wasn't necessarily, I guess it was a goal, but I think we can have staff take a look at that and just report back on a future agenda. Is there a consensus to give that direction?
Yes.
Okay.
And we would say that the housing survey would roll right into the planning improvement processing, shall we say.
Yeah.
And so, which I think was one of our major goals.
Yeah, and then I'm not going to belabor the point, but I do think that when in an appropriate time, whether it's when we talk about streets or we're talking about community safety, I know that we had talked about doing surveys with respect to pedestrian safety and crossing on Grand, crossing on Oak Park, crossing on 4th, but I do believe we need to take a look at this area with respect to children that are and families that are coming to the school. Is there an opportunity to identify that and what opportunities may be out there? Okay. All right. So I think with that, let's take a 10-minute break.
Thank you.
We're going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting for Monday, October 2nd, 2017. I think we are live. We good? Broadcast? Okay, let's move on to item number 8. This is the fiscal year 2016-17 year-end financial review. Administrative Services Director Chapman.
Good evening, Council and Honorable Mayor. Tonight we have before you the fiscal year end for 2016-17 financial review. And we're going to start with the general fund, which is the city's primary fund, and it supports the police, fire, parks and rec, general administration type services. And we receive our most of our general revenues will go into this fund. Property taxes, sales taxes, TOT. For the general fund, we had estimated at the end of the year that we would end with a cash balance of $4,338,590. Our estimated actuals for auditing purposes, we are looking at a little bit lower at $4,261,391, which is about $77,000 lower than what we were originally anticipating. But that lower amount is only about 1.7% lower. The overall tax revenues are lower by approximately $100,000. Secured property taxes were down by $173,000, and this was more than likely off due to trying to estimate the unwinding of the triple flip. Licensing and permit revenues were lower than expected. Construction permits came in lower by about $93,000. Construction permits are another one of the items that's very, very hard to project for year end. Service charges were actually higher than anticipated, with our planned check and inspection fees being about $119,200 higher. Make sure I get all of them on there. Our general fund expenditures also trended just a bit higher than what we had anticipated for year end. Part of this was caused by facility maintenance costs, which were higher. We had a larger than normal tree removal during last fiscal year. We had a repair to the pillar at the train station and supplies for the Make a Difference Day that Cal Poly put on. Building program expenditures were overestimated by $103,000, but we had the higher plan check inspection fees that offset, and expenditures in most of the programs were actually pretty close to what was anticipated. And if you compare it to what our general fund's budget was, originally we had budgeted the general fund to come in at about $2.6 million in cash remaining, and we actually are ending up with $4.2 million in cash remaining from the original budget. We had a lot of changes to last year's budget. As I said, the ending cash balance was about $78,000 lower than anticipated, or 1.7 less than estimated. Variances from estimated revenues and expenditures were relatively small compared to the fact that we have a $10 million budget. And the general fund cash balance ended at about 19% instead of the 20% that we were anticipating. For our water fund, it is responsible for the city's, wastewater fund. It's responsible for the city's maintenance and operation of the wastewater lines within the city. We also bill and collect and forward funds to the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. Our wastewater fund estimated cash balance, we were estimating we would end the year at $2.7 million. We ended with $2.8 million, approximately $92,000 higher. And our revenues were slightly higher than anticipated, and our expenditures were lower than anticipated, which basically came from our capital projects. Cash reserve anticipated to end the year with more than 100% of operating funds, but for fiscal year 17-18, we will end the year at 57% of operating funds, and that's due to a $1.3 million capital plan that we have for this year. For our water fund, it is responsible for the city's maintenance and operation of water lines, tanks, and wells. And our water fund had beginning cash at a little over $9.5 million, ending cash at $500,000. was the estimated amount. We actually ended a little higher with $118,000 additional at $662,000 ending cash balance. As I said, the revenues were slightly higher than expected, and the expenditures were slightly lower than anticipated. So our cash reserves, we ended the year with 24% of operating expenses, and the cash reserves for fiscal year 17-18 are difficult to determine at this time, and part of that is because of the uncertainty of future water rates, and there are some additional expenditures, it looks like, associated with our street projects. And the recommendation that we have is to receive and file the report. And do you have any questions?
Thank you for that staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Let me start to my left this time. Jeff?
Sure. Thank you for that report, Gayla. Just a question and a comment. So the comment first is, so it looks like the water fund and the sewer and the wastewater fund were both, they trended slightly higher.
Yes.
While the general fund trended slightly lower.
Yes.
And so the general fund balance, that includes, and this trending lower includes all of the expenditures in and expenditures out that we did throughout the year, correct? I mean, so because I seem to recall, and maybe it was in January or the when we did the mid-year discussions, we had a projected surplus of approximately $200,000, and then we allocated that across various elements of the general fund. So, but when you take all that together and that funding, then we came slightly under expectations.
Correct.
Is that, okay.
And if I can add to that, Mr. Lee, just budgeting is always a dynamic activity, yeah. And so what's shown here is how we finished the year based on our estimated actuals, which was carried out in May of this past year in preparation for this year's budget. And to your point, that does account for the higher revenues we saw over the course of the mm-hmm. fiscal year and lower expenditures. So for reference, our original budget last fiscal year included $9.1 million in revenues. We revised that number to 10.5 by the end of the year, and we finished $33,000 below that. So we generated $1.5 million in additional revenues last fiscal year above and beyond what was budgeted before that time. Expenditures, we actually budgeted $9.9 million and finished at $9.5 million. So we were actually below the original budget, just a little higher than what we estimated we finished out the year. So again, budgeting is a dynamic art, and mm-hmm. we were actually pretty close to the mark in how we finished the fiscal year. And to the other point about fund balance, we actually did finish the year with the 20% fund balance for this fiscal year. The cash balance looks at strictly the cash on hand. Fund balance is a broader, more universal target that includes cash and also assets and other factors that are included in the fund. And to that end, we did and do still have our 20% fund balance pursuant to the council's policy goal.
All right, so from this telling the story standpoint, the city's in good financial positions, a good financial position. This balancing up of the books, for lack of a better term, is positive when you tell the complete story, because we generated more revenue, which gave us an opportunity to do more projects and to do more things to benefit the city. We're just kind of, this is a balancing up report.
And to use some budget terminology, we scored the savings and scored the revenues mm-hmm. as part of projects that could be implemented last fiscal year and what could be programmed this year in our budget.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Mary?
I think it's, you know, it sounds like we're in good shape and we're pretty close to where we thought we'd be, and I want to recognize the city manager and the staff, because I think you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, are still working off a budget that was worked on before City Manager Bronson came. So you've kind of all picked it up seamlessly, considering this is, you know, you had a whole transition in between, and so I think I feel confident, and I know you guys are going to have us right where we need to be very quickly in quick measure. So go for it.
Barbara?
The only question I have, I think I heard you say that property tax is a little lower than anticipated.
Right. Several years ago, the state did what they called a triple flip, and they did a sales tax and property tax swap. They unwound the property tax end of the swap. Okay. And calculating those numbers are not easy. You have to take a lot of factors into account. We did receive half of the triple flip last year, but with the unwind, it did make it a little difficult on coming up with where the property tax projection should end.
Okay.
And again, just to add to that, we still finished higher for the year.
We did.
We just finished a little lower than the amount that we thought we'd finish when we budgeted.
That's you.
All right. So I'm going to hold my comment, but I have to ask. So you were talking about some of the costs being a little higher or not planned for, and you mentioned the tree removal, train station, and Make a Difference Day. So what amounts were spent on those three programs or activities?
They came pretty close to the amount that the program was over. I do not have the exact amounts, but that program was slightly higher by $46,000. But I know we did have a lot of extra tree removal last year, and that accounts for a good part of it.
And that's the tree removal. That's just not at Ramona.
That's throughout the city.
And a lot of that was also due to the winter we had. We lost a lot of trees this past, or needed to cut down trees because they were in imminent danger. I think in general, the three different items here were pretty even, if I recall correctly. So I think it was roughly 10 to 15,000 for each of those three different areas. I think they make a difference.
So the total was 46?
Total was 46, yeah.
Okay.
And the pillar at the train station was an accident that was damaging one of the pillars there and had to be taken care of.
Very good. Okay. Let me open this up to the public, see if there's anyone that would like to address this item. No? Okay. I'm going to close public comment, come back to the council, and I would just say, having been on this council and involved with the city for many years, I would say a 1.7% variance and a budget, as you said, there are dynamic factors, they are projections, and so I would say really good job in tracking and reporting out. I think there'll be opportunities going forward because I know a large portion of our general fund and whatnot comes from property taxes, and we can say that there's probably been a handful of properties that have changed hands that are in the industrial and commercial areas, and I think we'll start to see some of that as we start moving forward with this fiscal year. This is a receiving file, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. Any other comments? I think Miriam had made comments. I want to make sure Barbara, you and Jeff have an opportunity if you wanted to make any comments. Okay. Thank you for the year in review, and we look forward to the next one. Okay. Now for the fun stuff. Let's move on to item number 9. Not that that wasn't fun, Gayla.
For me, it was fun. I like numbers.
There we go. We're going to move on to item number 9. This is Measure K-14 bond issuance and street repair update. Who's going to give this report?
I am starting, and then Greg will be coming in and tag-teaming on the end.
Okay.
As background, in November 2014, we had Measure K passed by our voters. And we have issued so far two series of bonds. The first was in March of 2015 for $5 million. The second was in April 2016 for $8 million, for a total of $13 million. We recently had a project overview by the Oversight Committee, and their report will be coming forward to Council, hopefully at the next meeting. On August 7th, the staff was directed to explore the issuance of between $10 and $15 million for the next phase of street work. And the city rehabilitation and related infrastructure is one of the city's major goals for this year. Oops, I'm too far. I'm wondering if I'm. There we go. Okay. The tax rate progression with the existing bonds, and as you can see on the screen, has gone from $24 in fiscal year 16 to $51.35 for fiscal year 18. And our estimated tax rate options for future bonds for $10 million for 18-19 would be $83.86, $12 million, $88.73, and $15 million, $96.22, and slightly higher for the year 2019-2020. This assumes a valuation growth of 2.5%. The new rates would go into effect next fiscal year, and estimated cost of our future street projects that are current that are under consideration are approximately $13 million. And this, the numbers that are there is per 100,000 of assessed valuation. Anticipated schedule of actions. Earlier tonight, you adopted a debt management policy. With this report, there is the option to adopt a resolution of intent to issue the bonds, and then there is an adoption of a resolution to issue the bonds that would be scheduled for November 7th, or 6th, sorry. And next, I will hand this over to Greg.
Thank you, Gayla. Greg Ray, Public Works Director, City Engineer. So we'll take this opportunity to provide Council a brief update on the status of our major K-14 funded projects. As Council is aware, the first three of the major K-14 projects are complete. Staff has expended, the city has expended, $6.7 million in improvements. And that's completed 84 blocks, and it also includes localized repairs on a number of additional streets. The 84 blocks represents about 20% of all the city's local streets. In May, I believe, in May 15th, the Council awarded the contract to V. Lopez in the amount of $6.3 million. And that project includes 53 blocks of rehabilitation and maintenance. And again, this is the largest single project in the city's history. Looking at the streets that are included in this current project, they include 3rd Street, Long Branch Avenue, Mentone, North 16th, South 8th, South 13th, and Stinson Court. Council's aware that the project is being completed in phases. The initial work would include upgrades of sewer and water lines, underground utilities, followed by repair of curbs, gutters, and sidewalks, and cross gutters on some streets, and then ultimately the streets will be repaved. Kind of looking at the status of the project and where it's started, the contractor mobilized in June. That included survey and dry utility work. Again, kind of looking at the phasing. Underground utility work began in July right here in front of us. Many of our city employees will remember that, and council may also. Almost conflicted with the council meeting. And through the months of August and September, sewer and water upgrades, curb, gutter, and sidewalks will continue. And then we're still anticipating paving will start in fall of 2017. Also, Council's probably aware that we're providing weekly updates on the city's webpage as well as social media. Other projects that are also underway, the South 4th Street paving project. It's not only underway, but it's pretty much complete short of the striping. And that project is not funded by Measure K, but by gas tax and local transportation account funds. Last year, the council identified 101 blocks for completion with future bond issues. This map, which is a part of what you have in your council staff report, shows the north half of the city, and those streets identified in green are those 101 blocks, or at least the north half of the 101 blocks identified by council. And this map here shows the south side, again the blocks in green. The blue, dark blue, are projects that have previously been completed. In addition to that, council had also identified that the northwest area of the city is the first priority to be selected from that list of 101 blocks. Staff has developed a project, and council's approved that project to move forward into design, or I should say it has approved us to solicit for design. The project includes Atlantic City, Beckett, Carmelde, Front Street, North First, Ocean View, Park View, and North Second. Staff is anticipating bringing a item before council on October 16th for award of the design contract, and it's anticipated that we would be in construction by spring of 2018. And there's a map showing far upper left-hand corner there, the few streets in green. Kind of hard to see, I bet. Yeah, there it is. But you can see a couple streets up in the northwest corner there. That is the small project that is being designed. And if council recalls, this was based on council's direction to identify and develop a number of smaller projects that could be delivered faster. And so, again, this project fits with that council guidance. Another item that has been recently identified, council requested information on the street notification process. If council recalls, there was a property owner on South 8th Street that had made some improvements after we were engaged in the design process, and we were unaware of those improvements. And unfortunately, the work we were proposing would end up removing some of those improvements that were just recently installed. So our current policy, I should say prior to council's interest in this, was to notify property owners during construction unless, and this was primarily on my judgment, we felt that the impacts to the private property improvements were so significant that we needed to discuss them during the design phase. We've gone ahead and established a modified policy, and that is to notify owners in writing of the potential for changes to property frontages, even before we're really sure if that's going to happen, and go ahead and distribute those notices via mail during the design phase. And so that is my brief update on the status of street projects, and I'll turn it back to Gail.
So tonight we have a recommended action to provide direction to staff and to adopt the resolution to proceed with the issuance and sale of the general obligation bonds.
Okay. Thanks for that staff report. Okay. Who wants to go first? Any questions?
I do have a couple questions.
Okay.
So it's actually going to end up being probably a question for both. So I'll start with my question for Greg first. So if I may. So on the last page of the staff reports, the streets in green, they don't include Atlantic City. So were several of those streets already designed as part of this phase? So if you can bring your map back up.
Yes, we have to.
Or the streets in the small project, I guess. Yeah, so one before that. So we're kind of bouncing between the two of them. So you said that
the list.
That one. Okay. Yes. Okay. So this one includes several streets, but it also includes Atlantic City, which isn't in green on the next sheet, on the next page. So I just want to make sure that either the Atlantic City and the streets north of that are already designed, or...
You know what? That is an error. That is an error. The small project does not include Atlantic City. Thank you for pointing that out.
So the map is correct, but the list...
The map is correct, and the list, I apologize, is wrong. May have been a holdover from a previous staff report. So.
Okay. So the map is correct, then?
The map is correct. It's Ocean View and North, if you see on the map.
Yeah.
It's really Ocean View and North.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the goal here was to identify a project at roughly $1 million. So.
Okay. Great. Okay, so that clarifies that question there. And then a question for Gayla, and I'm going to start by apologizing for not giving you advance warning for this question.
That's okay.
Going back to your tables for the estimated tax rate, so you had indicated that if we were to proceed with a $15 million bond under this approach, the 1920 tax rate per $100,000 would be $102.84. So
yes.
Realizing that the bonds go for 25 years, is if with the three bonds in place, would that be the highest tax rate, or would there be do we have a anticipated?
As we continue to sell bonds until the bonds start falling off, it will have a tendency to go higher. So yes, we will probably see a higher tax rate with the future bond.
Okay, so if we did issue a $15 million bond, or any of the bonds here, so the $15 million bond is $102 just for the $15 million, or is that for the, what would be the entire?
That would be for the entire amount.
Yes. So, because we'd be at $28 million at that point, correct?
That would be the cumulative amount of all the bonds that the council would have approved.
Okay. So, but it would not be the... There would still be some escalation for several years to get to that point, to where then some of the other bonds start to go down in tax rate.
Yes.
Okay. That's correct.
Okay. So, but we don't know where what that 25-year table would look like tonight.
We do not have that. We could do an estimate, but we would also need to know, in order to complete an estimate, as to how often we would be issuing bonds over the next several years. We would have to put a new schedule together.
And we could also provide further information as part of the November 6th resolution of issuance to show you that longer-term schedule.
Okay. Those were my questions.
Barbara?
No, Jeff just stole my question.
Mary?
Yeah, my question's just to make sure I understand the math, too. Just tacking on to Jeff's question, you know, understanding you haven't prepared the entire length for the next 20 years, but would we be safe in assuming the increase each year would be comparable? I think from 18, 19 to 20, it's about $8. Would it be like that, or would there be a big jump up at some point?
It would depend if bond rates stay the same. As long as bond rates are steady, we could probably project a similar increase.
Okay. And I mean, you've been really clear, but I want to make sure when I'm voting on something, I understand the math. So right now, someone who has a $500,000 home is paying around $255 a year.
Approximately, yes.
Approximate. And then let's say we did the $15 million, someone with a $500,000 home would be paying around, you know, in 2020, maybe $510.
Correct.
Okay. Okay. I think that... one other question I had. It just said in the staff report, for the council's reference, the additional cost of future street projects under consideration over the next 2 years would be $13 million. So my question would be, if we know it's going to take us at least 2 years to spend the $13 million, why would we bond for $15 now?
So that you can prepare and have the design completed for the next series of streets.
Okay. So because I would just want to avoid bonding and kind of having money sitting, but we're not going to do that. Right.
My assumption is that we would move forward with another series of streets and have another small issuance potentially.
Right. And just to add to that, one way to look at it is that the $10 million issuance would require us to pare down the list of street improvements from $13 million down to a $10 million level. $12 million is pretty close to that $13 million, and with some minor paring, we could probably fit that amount. $15 million does provide some additional capacity for unexpected street project needs beyond this list of $13 million. It does provide, to Gayla's point, the ability to accelerate the next issuance of street work even after this. And also, it does provide some potential capacity for support needs to help carry out the project more effectively. By support needs, I mean additional maintenance and engineering support internal to the organization that would help us deliver on these projects more effectively for the community. This is an enormous undertaking for the organization, and of course, we've been able to complete 25% of streets within 3 years and are on track for completing one-third of local streets by this time next year, which is a very significant rate of achievement for the community's investment of $50 million in bond financing. It has had a significant impact on maintenance support and staffing, on engineering support and staffing, so there could be an opportunity to support further staff resources to enable us to deliver this project even faster, even more effectively for the community. So that the $15 million could provide some kind of limited term capacity to help support those needs more effectively.
Okay. And just one more question. Someone mentioned, maybe it was during Jeff's questions, that if we approve this amount of the bond, we'll be at about $28 million, so we'll be over 50% of the funds, and if we complete all the associated work, will we be at 50% or more complete, hopefully?
I believe we'll be higher than 50% when this next bond issuance is done.
That question kind of came up during our bond review committee discussion. So by area, it will be over 50%.
Okay.
By anticipated total cost, that's much harder to predict.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
By area of street, yes.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Because the other thing you got to take into account is by area of street, there are arterials that are not part of this grand Fourth Oak Park, and we're going to talk about that. So I would say good job. I think also Long Branch would be a project that's already designed and ready to go to bid, correct?
Yeah, so two projects that I did fail to mention during my very rapid update on streets is that Long Branch is designed, and it can go out to bid with this next bond issuance, and Newport is still out there. So we have had the neighborhood meetings. We need to put together a plan that hopefully meets the objectives of the neighbors as well as the council in getting something completed on Newport. So we do have two projects still out there, and again, that's the small project in the northwest corner would be using those new proceeds.
So let me back up and say thank you for, I think we've been saying, let's break these projects down into smaller increments so we can have folks working continuously and reduce the gaps between when one project ends and the next starts. So I want to say thanks for taking that into consideration. That's the first thing. I think the second thing, you stole my thunder. I was going to mention Newport as well. So I think Long Branch and Newport, those are pretty significant streets. Because I think Long Branch, we're looking at, what, 3rd to about 13th, maybe? Yeah. Or maybe not that far. I'm thinking probably to about 12th, right, where the school, the western edge of the school. So I think we have an opportunity to move those projects along. So did you guys do, and I, like Jeff, I probably should have asked you to do this earlier. I'm going to assume that we, a $300,000 home, we didn't do the math on anything like that, did we? What would that look like? I guess we just
For the $15,300,000 home would in 2020 would approximately be $308 or $309.
Okay. Got it. And then, Greg, I did want to ask you because actually, I was going to be silent that your list showed Atlantic City, and so the question becomes: so it looks like we're ready to go out to bid that. On that particular one, so we would have to come up with a separate package then. There's no...
We're ready to approach council for approval of design on that.
Okay.
Not ready to bid yet, but we would be... Our plan is to be ready to bid the minute funds are available.
Okay. So then maybe the strategy becomes, depending on what direction the staff or the council gives to staff, on whether it is 10, 12, or 15 million. Matt, do you anticipate coming back to kind of reaffirm the list of streets that is on this map and to maybe give some, to prioritize to some degree?
Yes, that's correct. So following your action tonight on the resolution, we will come back to you on November 6th with resolution of issuance of the bonds, and we could work in some discussion on that agenda regarding further prioritization of the next round of streets, and then from there we could further prioritize even further. We do want to make sure we are landing on a prioritized list of streets so that once these bond funds are closed by the end of the calendar year, we can turn and begin letting contracts go, Long Branch being first out of the gate, and then this smaller package of streets in the northwest quadrant, ready to go after that, and then the third priority and fourth priority from there. So yeah, we'll have a continual discussion with the council on priorities over the next few months.
Okay, because yeah, I had highlighted Atlantic City. Actually, I was thinking if you came down to Atlantic City, I think we stopped at, I want to say, 7th or 8th, and then Ocean View, you brought it over, did Charles Place, and then that turns into Margarita. I think then we'd have every street north of Atlantic City done. But
yeah,
that's a discussion for another day.
And with this package, we're trying to really be true to the council direction about a small project.
Yeah.
So we're trying to really narrow down to 10 blocks, and so that's really what Greg used in identifying this geography here, in the interest of getting this done more rapidly.
No, and I'd say it's a good approach, so don't. I was just trying to set the stage for the next small segment to bolt
yes.
on to what you're doing.
Absolutely.
I know. Just never stop pushing the envelope, do I? So, anyway, okay, those are all of my questions. So let me open this up to the public, and let me see if there's anyone who'd like to address this item. I do have one speaker request from Mr. Todd Mitchell.
Hi, everybody. So I live on 93 Manhattan, and, you know, I'd be, you know, ever so delighted if one of those small projects might be 4th Street to 10th Street on Manhattan. One of the interesting, so it's the lead up to Grover Beach Elementary. The street is, you know, like many of the South Grover streets, in bad condition. I know that when Mayor Scholes was wandering the neighborhoods early on, I actually had the opportunity to speak to him in my front yard. You know, and he garnered my vote. And even earlier tonight, though, learning that there may have been other funds available through grants and such that would have really fit, I guess, a picture that Mayor Scholes was able to paint in my mind early on. You know, now that those funds may or may not be available, then you know, looking at these to fit within that, the K-14 would be great. So, anyways, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Todd. Sharon, you have. All right. Do you need a mic or you? All right.
I'll wobble up here.
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. I just want to look at the financing part. And as a citizen who pays her tax bill come every end of November, I'm wondering, beyond this proposed bond issue, when would you anticipate the next increase bond issue? Because it seems like we're doing a bite here and a bite here and a bite here and a bite here. And people are looking at their tax bills and saying, it's going up every year. It's adding up, and it's way beyond. And so that's my concern on behalf of the public.
Thank you, Sharon. We always appreciate your comments.
May I ask her a question?
Sure.
So, oh, look at that.
Nice.
That's not wallet.
Nice
proof of that.
Nice. So as a member of the public who brought that up this evening, we are actually ahead of schedule. So on our K-14 program, so with regards to both expenditures as well as improvements, so what would be your perspective on whether we need to go faster or slower with regards to the overall program?
Well, I hadn't thought about that. Well, I think as far as the projects and the work, it should keep up with our financing. And I do think that planning ahead and having that part of, you know, so design is ready to go and plans are ready to go before the next issuance is a good idea. As far as the public goes, those whose streets, and my street has been improved, so I'm,
mine,
you know, yeah. But I think for those whose streets have not been improved, and for those who are not seeing their streets on a list to be improved in the near future, I think they might be concerned and say, let's go faster.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't see any other speaker requests, Holmes, or no one else, so let me close it and bring it back. And then just to add to that, because I thought the original plan called for an issuance every 3 years, and when we were out, when we first started going, remember this? We started first started going through this process, getting public input, and people from the community were showing up and saying, just do them as fast as you can.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I think, Jeff, you're right. We are ahead of schedule, and maybe we can provide more information on that. But I also agree with Sharon that we want to make sure that we keep pace. So I think this new strategy of trying to take smaller chunks will help us keep up and not have funds sitting in a savings account. We want action. We want it on the streets. And then I do want to say, Todd, I'm always looking out for Manhattan and 11th. Those streets that terminate into the school, we do need to find a way to fix the streets and fix the sidewalks. And so we'll keep pushing on that. And I know that we're going to have further discussion on streets as we move forward in selection. So thanks for those comments. Absolutely. Okay. Staff is looking for some direction. Do we want to go out with a new issuance on the bonds? I think they've kind of laid out what the schedule would look like, and then the question is, they need direction on the amount, correct? 10, 12, or 15 million? Any thoughts? Anyone want to make a motion?
I'll go with thoughts first, and if that leads into a motion, that's unless there's comments for that. I would actually be supportive of moving forward with a $15 million bond at this point for a couple of reasons, one of which was alluded to by staff during the presentation, is this would put us approximately halfway through the funding and more than halfway through with the square footage of the streets, but it does 180 degrees different from the way we did it currently, and where we had the funding that was sitting and so was waiting to be used and was on folks' tax bills, where this would be 180 degrees the other direction, where we would, if we do a bond now, it wouldn't go onto people's tax bills until December of next year. Mm-hmm. So we would have a really good opportunity to spend a good portion of these funds before there's a need to begin the repayment process. And so I think there's a optic is the kind of the word du jour, where we as a city would really be spending wisely with regards to the funds and moving forward with the with the benefits that we're providing to the residents and the amount of work that staff's putting into the roads would be that much more visible and that much more appreciated by that. So I'd be supportive of that, and then I do have some additional comments.
Okay. Ladies, either one of you?
Being so financially conservative, do we really need to do it this soon? But being realistic and keeping this sleigh running smoothly, I think the $15 million.
Okay. Mary?
Yeah, I agree with Barbara and having some trepidation about it, just because, I don't know how many of you check Nextdoor daily, but I am getting pushed back on Nextdoor every day. Not enough progress. What's going on? And I explain, and people are mostly respectful. They're just really concerned. And I know it's because we've got a huge amount in the design pipeline, and it started, and I think people are going to start seeing that. But I really like Jeff's point that people won't even be dealing with this on their tax bill till a year from December, when hopefully they're going to be seeing huge results and they're really going to start, understanding that we are doing what we said we're going to do. This was supposed to be a 20-year project, and we are less than 3 years in, so yes, I would be supportive of 15 if we are assuredly confident that we can also utilize it in a timely manner.
Okay, so I'm going to break from the norm. I'm going to move that we give staff direction to adopt the resolution to proceed with issuance and sell general obligation bonds in the amount of $15 million. And I'm making that motion because we are taking action. I understand that people want to see pavement on the ground. I know that we were doing a lot of concrete work and curb work, and I know when Greg says fall of 2017, I trust that we're going to be doing that, and then people will start or really, they see that work's going on, but I think it's not until you have pavement on the ground that people really visualize. So I think we are showing that we're moving forward, and I will have comments later, I'm just saying cost of living and are doing business in Grover Beach, we do want to make sure that that's reasonable. So I think this is going to go hand in hand with our discussion of water that's coming up with us and finding ways to keep other costs down as we move forward and fix people's streets. So that's my motion.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay. If there's no additional discussion, yes.
So I was going to say my discussion can hold till after the vote. It has more to basically go towards the public notification process and the elements that staff are making changes to the modification. So it's not pertinent to the motion.
Good, because I have some other things too. So roll call, Donna.
Mayor Schultz.
Yes.
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent, and Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. So then I would also say let's give staff some direction. I think it's pretty clear. I know that you've been posting weekly updates on the progress of the streets, but I really feel like we need to put together a better communications plan. We need to take a look, and I think as Sharon has said, you know, when will we anticipate the next issuance, and what are the next set of streets that are under consideration or that are on the list? So maybe we can come back at another date and talk about what does our action plan look like. I think the community, we just need to let them know that we're taking action, and I think it's an impressive statistic to say we're going to be at 50% or more in such a short period of time.
So. Yeah, I would agree. Something that can fit on one page, that can tell people what's done, what's going to be done, what it's costing them, what it's going to cost them, and with some, to show the huge progress that's been made, mm-hmm. because it's really... I'm a citizen. It's hard for me to point to certain things off the top of my head, but when you look at it as a whole, it's a lot. So I know if I could share it on nextdoor.com, mm-hmm. I'd be happy.
Well, and I think that staff identifying that small section of streets in the northwest, I think that's a place where we were hearing some pushback and even some rumors I'd heard that they said we weren't going to do the streets over there. I think that'll, you know, people will see that we are trying to be fair in how we go about selecting streets and doing it in a methodical manner. Jeff, I know you had something on notification.
Sure. So two things there is, and I appreciate staff kind of modifying your approach to start the notification process earlier in the design process. I think the cost of a stamp for any number of homeowners or property owners is very beneficial. I think it goes a long way to saying, hey, okay, the city's about to do something on my street. I better talk to them because I've either done something or I'm about to consider doing something that may impact what we've done. So I think that's I appreciate staff's willingness to change be flexible in that direction. And then also the appreciation towards kind of doing the smaller projects, because we can do and not to say that this is going to make it easier on the bidding process, but fortunately or hopefully we now have a nice consistent package to be able to go have a kind of a continuous opening process and then construction process towards that. So there's just two appreciative elements and comments.
Okay. And then Matt, I have a question regarding, I know we had talked about encroachment into public rights of way, mm-hmm. as well as some traffic / pedestrian safety. I guess we should talk about when we intend to have something like that come back to the council.
Sure. Well, first, on the encroachment issue, The council had a policy discussion a few meetings ago regarding right-of-way encroachments, and you provided further direction and clarification to us about how to proceed in working through encroachments in a way that was not overly onerous on property owners, but still allowed us to make the improvements we need to make on imminent projects. So staff took that direction, and we're incorporating that into this project, but also into the code compliance program that will be really launched here very soon once we hire the new position that will take place here very soon. So I think we have good direction, we feel, on that front, and we'll be implementing it as we go forward. On the second piece, on traffic safety, we are looking at bringing an item to the council later this fall on the topic of traffic, pedestrian safety, to update you on some of the smaller projects that have gone on, but then also have a more global discussion about where we go longer term with traffic and pedestrian safety, bicycle safety. I think that'd be a great conversation as a prelude into our budget process to identify some specific capital needs the council may wish to have.
Okay, because I guess I was partly asking that question because I know in some communities they do a plan line which identifies where the ultimate right-of-way would be, then, but I don't know if there's a way to, and that'd be pretty difficult to do that beyond arterial streets to say this is ultimate plan line so people don't put stepping stones or encroach into that. So that's a discussion for another day.
Okay. So with respect to a possible discussion for another day, is as economic development continues within the city, we may come into a situation, and I think specifically on Ramona, we have several development projects that are in the process of coming forward. Currently, the bulk of Ramona is not on the list to move forward. So do we run the risk of having development projects do streets and then us as a city coming back in and doing road improvements as part of K-14 either before or after them? So I'm wondering if there's any desire to consider or at least discuss an in-lieu fee for those parts of the city where development projects may occur so that a developer could pay the in-lieu fee of their condition of approval for road improvements that goes into a fund which then gets utilized as part of the Measure K-14 project as it comes forward on a particular street.
So I think you're asking, is there interest in putting that on an agenda and have that discussion?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right, let's move on. Thank you, staff. How about any council committee reports?
John,
yes.
You pulled.
Oh, I did. I did the calendar.
Yeah.
All right, I pulled the calendar because the only thing that I thought about on this was two things, right? I wanted to just kind of get everybody's thoughts on canceling the meeting in August and the second one in December, and I'm just wondering if it would be better for us just to hold off, especially in the month of December, to see where things are in the process as opposed to canceling it.
I kind of struggled with that over the weekend, looking at that, going, okay, do we cancel them now, or do we schedule them and cancel them if we don't have a full list of agenda topics. In December of 18, we'll have a swearing in ceremony, which could be less than 30 days from the election. So I think we had a situation in 2016 where that occurred is that depending upon when the county certifies the election, we may have to schedule a special meeting in anticipation of that.
That's a good point.
We might need to do that anyway, but I didn't come to a consensus in my brain of whether to keep the meeting of the 17th or to keep it now and cancel it if we don't need it in the future. So I'd be willing to go in either direction.
I haven't really thought about the December, but for the summer, if we are going to cancel, I would like to know because between the school schedule and the softball schedule, there's about 10 days I can go on vacation. So I would, if we I would rather not schedule it tentatively and then find out later it's canceled. I mean, I would rather just know. Because this year we only did one in the month of July. I just think in July or August we should only do one. Like, a lot of councils go completely dark all summer, so take one meeting off somewhere.
Well, and I would say selfishly, someone who's turns into a pumpkin probably around July or August, I certainly want to make sure that we're still working and we're not campaigning.
Right.
Anyway, so yeah, I think if you guys are comfortable with the calendar as submitted by staff, knowing we have flexibility to put it back on, I think I'd be okay with that. I just don't want to send a message that we're not going to be working.
Mr. Mayor, just one other alternative for the council to consider is, right now this does cancel the first meeting in September, the one right after Labor Day. So one other thought is, the council could put that meeting back on calendar for the first meeting in September, still cancel the first meeting in August, and then for now cancel the second meeting in December. And that way you could take off that one cancellation, still keep to the summer cancellation, and then the end of December one.
Yeah, I'd be fine adding September back in, because I know we'll be around.
So it'd be adding back in the September 4th, which would be the Tuesday after Labor Day.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be supportive of that.
And just to mention, on our work ethic, if you look back at our meetings, not only did I think we make up for the one that we missed for vacation, with all the special meetings that we had, I think we had about five or six extra.
Trust, so people know. Trust me, as someone who's been on this council a long time, we probably can count the number of special meetings on one hand. We should do a lot more of that. I think I'm fine. Let's leave the calendar. We'll assess where we are and add back as we need to, because I just think, to me, it makes more sense to cancel the meeting right after Labor Day, because it kind of forces us into staff doing work in a short time frame, and then it pushes us into a space where other cities are having meetings. So,
okay.
But I think if we'll just sort of assess where we are. Something tells me we're going to be very busy in Grover Beach.
Absolutely.
Okay, then I'll make a motion that we adopt the proposed city council meeting schedule for calendar year 2018 as presented.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. I don't think we need a roll call on this. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. All right. Thank you, Barbara, for keeping me honest.
We're going to have to bring
it
back.
Hey. All right. Council committee reports. Anyone got anything they want to report?
I had a couple.
Okay, go for it.
We had a big APCD meeting because we had a big update from CARB, the California Air Resources Board, on the dust rule, and that always is a big meeting. They have a lot of good data. They have a lot more specific data as to where remediations can be. The only little bit disappointing part about the meeting was that they said, well, we definitely can get you a plan, but it's probably going to take a year and a half to get to a plan, even though they told us very specific zones. So we tried to just do what we could do as politicians and just vote on something to vote to push ahead, which we didn't have the votes to do. So, but we are getting another part of the agenda is we're getting a new APCO because Larry Allen is retiring, and it's a person from inside the organization, Gary Wiley, and he has good relationships with, I think, everyone on the board, so it's a new day, and open minds will be open and reopened, and we proceed with hope. So that was that meeting. And I had a homeless services coordinating committee meeting where we all just kind of touched base on warming centers, point in time count, stuff like that. One bit of good news is that because everyone on a federal level and local level has been focusing on homeless veterans, in Slo County, it looks like we're down from 250 homeless veterans to about 80. And we keep pushing. You know, that's a drop in the bucket compared to all the other people, but it's at least it's a bit of good news. And progress, good progress on our warming center. And our South County Warming Center went from kind of being the flailing one in the conference room to now kind of being the model that, you know, we're up, we're moving. And so I think we have some of the best progress in the county toward a warming center right now, which I'm very proud of, and proud of all of our local partners that helped to get this process going and where it needs to be. So that was about it.
Okay, anyone else? Barbara, you have anything?
No, I don't really. South County Transit will be meeting, I think, later in the month. One comment is that the Chamber of Commerce will not be having a luncheon in October. So I'm skipping that. And Capslo is doing what Capslo does. Digging up funds.
Gotcha. Okay. Jeff, you have anything?
Just had two meetings. One was the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, which was really an update on the end-of-year progress by the county on projects. And they did complete a number of projects and did have some savings that they will transfer on to the individual cities. So there will be a credit coming back to the city. I don't recall the exact amount, but it'll be reflected on the January billing for that from Zone 3. And then I had the opportunity to attend the HSOC meeting on behalf of Merriam, and that was just some updates on grants and a good presentation by Laurel Weir on the 50 Now program and the point in time contact, the point in time count. That will be moving forward, and we are down this year, but which is a good thing, so which is a benefit, but it should not impact the availability of funds coming to the county based upon that good news.
Yeah, and thank you for covering that.
Certainly. And that's all I had.
So let me see what I have. I'm trying to get my dates correct here. So I don't have anything to report on SLOCOG. That meeting is actually Wednesday, 10-4. Same thing with the Regional Transit Authority. I did not attend the Five Cities Fire Authority.
Oh, did you have something on that, Barbara? Yeah. We approved the 5-year plan. Is about the most important thing that came out of that. And there was a discussion on the snafu that occurred a couple of months ago in communications, and that has been dealt with very successfully, and everybody's happy with that.
Excellent. Okay. So, on, I believe it was September, I have to get my dates correct. These are the kind of reports I do not like delivering. On September 20th, the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Board met. And we did go over other things such as warrants and other items that were important to the district's operation. But the one thing I did want to highlight, I'm sure everyone has seen the news reports and whatnot. So I will just say this, that Shailene Bennett of Liebert Cassidy Whitmore was there to present the findings of and recommendations from the investigation of Director Hill. And if anyone wants to see the meeting, you can probably go on to AGB or even the website for the district to get the details on that. At the end of the day, the board voted 2-1 to adopt a resolution of censure of Director Hill. That has to come back on another meeting for official adoption. The board also voted 2-1 to not issue confidential memos or emails to Director Hill because that was one of the focal points of the investigation. And then finally, the board voted to draft a letter to direct the legal counsel to draft a letter to the Rio Grande City Council regarding this matter. It is certainly not something that I'm pleased with having to have voted on. And I've said it, and I'll say it again here. I'm not a political enemy of Mayor Hill. I know that his intentions were genuine, and the report speaks for itself. So we will continue trying to make progress to keep the plant operating. The plant is operating sufficiently, and hopefully we start to turn a corner in dealing with these personnel matters and issues. And so I will keep you all apprised as I get more information. I will not be able to attend the meeting on Wednesday night because I do have a conflict with the job that actually pays my mortgage. So I've already talked to our alternate, and she is prepared to attend the meeting on Wednesday. So that's, I think, pretty succinct. And like I said, anyone who wants more information, you can go on and review the meeting. It was not an easy meeting, and it certainly is not something that I'm pleased to have to address. But that said, let's keep moving on. Any council communications?
I have one.
Okay.
November 5th is going to be the yearly fundraiser at the Exploration Station, and I'm on the board, so I have tickets. This year, it's usually the Chemistry of Cocktails. This year, it's an Italian theme, so it's called Mamma Mia Presents the Chemistry of Cocktails, and it's going to be an Italian lunch. Some Italian drink concoctions and live music, of course, in a silent auction. And I have tickets. They're $70. And it starts at 1 o'clock on Sunday, November 5th. So it should be a fun event.
There's a lot going on.
I know.
Anyone else?
I do have one which is even slightly further out than November 5th, but it's Giving Tuesday, which is the first Tuesday after Thanksgiving, which this year happens to be November 28th. Finns and the Five Cities Homeless Coalition put together a fundraiser down at Finns for where all proceeds benefit the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and the services that they provide. So November 28th, typically 5 to 9 in the evening. So come out to enjoy a sunset, enjoy a cocktail, and enjoy a great dinner.
All
I don't
right.
have tickets yet, but I will.
My goodness. I'm so glad we get the big bucks for being up here. You guys, these fundraisers. City Manager, any reports or comments tonight?
Yes, sir. A few items to update to Council. First, we are pleased that the Golden West Park improvements are steaming right along. We're now looking at probably a 2 or so week period for the rest of the improvements to be made. We have some final punch list items to take care of, and then we can move on to the fun part, planning a ribbon cutting ceremony for this long-awaited park improvement. So kudos to our staff in Public Works and Parks and Recreation for getting this done, and neighborhood involvement, and we'll look forward to a very good event here coming up to celebrate our new park facility. Speaking of events, this past Sunday we had the 18th annual Cal Poly Women's Basketball Clinic for boys and girls all across the South County area. This year we had 40 attendees at the event, including my daughter. It was a wonderful event. The Cal Poly team did a marvelous job, and it was just a great event. Also, Mayor Pro Tem Shaw's son and daughter were there as well, I'll add. great event and just such a great partnership between the city and Cal Poly. Coming up next is a tennis clinic for both from both the men's team and the women's team in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for more information on that. October 14th, our first ever movie in the park at Ramona Garden Park, 7 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I'm pleased to say that the movie this year will be Toy Story, instant classic that is very family-friendly and just a great movie for all generations. So 7 o'clock, Saturday, October 14th, we'll have a food truck or two there at the park as well to provide some food and beverages, and should be a great family-friendly event under the stars. And then October 27th, our annual Carve Pumpkin Halloween Activities event, Friday night, also at Ramona Park. We also have the Rotary Trunk or Treat festivities for some trick-or-treating right around the park. And the annual event, really good opportunity for our kids. And lastly, just to update the council that right now the community survey is in the field. We have emails, text messages, and phone calls going out to residents to get information on on city services, on key issues facing the city, on how we're communicating with residents. For any residents who are watching, this is a city-sponsored survey that we really want to get feedback from across the community to help us assess how we're doing and how we can do our jobs even better. So the fielding will take place for the next couple of weeks, and then we'll be able to report the results back to the council in a month or two and be able to use that to inform our goal setting, budgets, and operational items going forward. With that, I am done.
Okay. City Attorney, any reports or comments?
Nothing this evening.
Okay. So then I'm going to backtrack just a little bit. So I know that the last one we talked about the Grover Beach Cleanup Day, and that was, what, September 16th. I think it was very well attended, and we want to make sure that this event grows. And so definitely want to make sure that we identify a day in next year so that we could start planning around that. So maybe that's something we can figure out at a future date. The other thing I did want to make everyone aware of is I had a opportunity to meet with Mr. Wayne Embry. He lives over, I believe, near Mentone and 16th Street. He had expressed some concerns with regard to traffic speeds, stop sign location, as well as some other public safety issues that are occurring at 16th Street Park. And what I asked Mr. Embry to do was to invite neighbors and folks who live over there to join me in a community meeting at 60th Street Park, and that would be on October the 11th at 6:30 p.m. I believe the city manager is attending, and I would like to see the police chief be there as well so that we can hear what the community has to say and see if there's any solutions to address these concerns. Anyway, that's all I've got. With that, we have a couple of closed session items. I'm going to ask the city attorney to address those, and then we will go into closed session.
Yes, we do, Mr. Mayor. We're going to be convening a closed session related to a conference of real property negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8, properties at APN 060-206-029. Agency negotiators, city manager, negotiating party is Union Pacific Railroad. And then the second item related to lease permit determinations pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.7 in reference to seven applicants.
Very good. I don't have any speaker request forms on the closed session. So with that, we are recessed in the closed session.